All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. We are live here from the KFES Digital News Desk. It is time once again for By the Bushel. It is our program here on the KFES Digital News Network, which you can watch in all those great locations there at the bottom of the screen. Download the news app. You can watch us sometimes on Facebook when we're live there. Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, Apple TV, we're streaming there. Introducing first, because she's first up here on our screen, we're going to be talking a little bit later in the show with Rosalie Knipp. She is an entomologist with the state of Missouri. Rosalie, how are you doing today?
Doing good. I've been enjoying the weather. How are you?
Doing fine. Glad to have you here. As always, we have Barry Bean here with us. He is with the Missouri Farm Bureau Board. Barry, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. We had the rain this morning kind of knocked us out of the field with some of the harvest, but I can tell you that over the weekend I had some business to tend to down in Little Rock, and drove down across the Central Plains in Arkansas, and was really excited down there to not simply see grain buggies and combines in fields the way that I've seen here, but they were actually running in Arkansas. So I saw an awful lot of rice being harvested, saw a lot of corn being shelled, and so the harvest is it's coming this way, and apparently they've gotten through some of the moisture problems that have slowed things down up here. But things are going well. Things are looking up in Peach Orchard. I think we'll be hitting it hard again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. As we look ahead, then we usually start off the show. We got a packed show today, but starting off the show as usual with a look at the numbers. What are we doing in the market today? What's going on there?
Okay, well, let's just hop over here to our futures, and as we can see today, the December cotton closed at 88.30. That was up 52. The new crop, December 24 cotton, closed at 80.69, up a big 2 points. Corn closed down 9.25 at 476.5. Soybeans closed down 22.5 at 13.46.5. Rough rice closed down 17 at 15.62.5 on the hundredweight. Wheat closed at 587.5, up 3. And it is kind of interesting here, because if you look over here at our cotton chart over here on the right, you can see that we had a big rally before the report. Everything that I'm going to talk about after this is having to do with the WASDE report, which explains our market's action today. You can see here when we sold off and we came back up today. Now you'll see a little differently shaped chart when we look here at corn. You know, we had that early summer rally back here, and you can see we've been steadily getting cheaper since, and after the report today, we fell off. We see a little bit of a similar pattern in soybeans, as the range has tended to narrow a little bit and fall off after the report. Rice has taken a big spill here in the last couple of days, and wheat, again, it's nobody's smiling in Mudville. So the long and the short of all that is that at the moment, it's probably a better time to own a cotton picker than it is to own a combine. It would be my takeaway from all that. And I do have one headline before we get into the big story today. And this is just something that we picked up. And that is that the Chinese ports are sitting on some of their fertilizer exports right now. Now, China is the primary supplier of fertilizer to India, and this is causing problems for Indians who are going into harvest. They're getting ready to hit those fields with fertilizer immediately after they harvest, and right now their fertilizer is still sitting in Chinese ports. So that's a situation that we're going to be watching here in the weeks going ahead. But of course, the big news of the day is that the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates are out. And the September WASDE is particularly important because this is the first WASDE of the year that is actually based on objective, on-the-ground observations. In other words, there were actually agronomists out walking around in fields and doing bowl counts, measuring ears, that sort of thing for this report, as opposed to up to now, it's It's been a bunch of people like me who did a little windshield farming and said what they thought those crops were going to produce. And I'm going to run through this a little bit here. On wheat, according to the September WASDE, the 2023-24 U.S. all wheat outlook for supply and use is unchanged. They left their wheat numbers alone with offsetting by class changes on exports. They shifted around from class to class. The projected 23-24 season average farm price is also unchanged at $7.50 a bushel. That is the price that the USDA expects the average American producer to be receiving on his wheat. The 23-24 global wheat outlook lowers supplies, consumption, exports, and ending stocks compared with last month. Now, if realized, this would be the first year-to-year decline in global wheat production since 2018. So this will be one to watch moving forward there. World ending stocks on wheat are reduced 7 million tons to 258.6 million and would be the lowest ending stocks since 2015-16. Ending stocks are tightened in many countries, particularly for several major wheat exporters. Now, in the long run, this should be bullish for wheat, although, as you can see, the market had kind of a mild response to it today. According to a lot of the commentary and some of the grain traders that I talked to earlier in the day, that's because most of these numbers were pretty well baked into the market already. Not a lot of surprises there. On corn, this month's 23-24 U.S. corn outlook is for slightly larger supplies and ending stocks. The projected beginning stocks for 23-24 are 5 million bushels lower based on mainly offsetting trade and corn use for ethanol changes in 22-23. Corn production for 23-24 is forecast at 15.1 billion bushels, up 23 million from last month, as greater harvested area more than offset the expected reduction in yield. The national yield average is forecast at 173.8 bushels per acre, down 1.3 bushels. Total U.S. corn use has unchanged at 14.4 billion. With supply rising slightly and use unchanged, ending stocks are up 19 million bushels to 2.2 billion. This season average corn price received by producers is unchanged at $4.90 a bushel. The world coarse grain outlook is for reduced production, marginally lower trade, and larger stocks relative to last month. Again, this is a little bit bearish. Moving on to rice. The outlook for 2023 and 24 U.S. rice this month is for larger supplies, exports, and domestic use, and ending stocks, which is bearish. Supplies are increased on higher beginning stocks, production, and imports. Now, this does get a little more interesting. The average all rice yield is up 52 pounds per acre to a record 7,751 pounds. All rice imports are raised 1 million hundredweight to 39 million as the growth in consumption of Asian aromatics is expected to continue despite significantly larger U.S. supplies. Actually, I met with the Missouri Farm Bureau Rice Committee the other day, and that's one of the things they were looking at is even though we've got an awful lot of domestic rice growers, well, for instance, Martin Rice down in Bernie, Missouri, that has bred an excellent jasmine rice. And I know there are some folks down in Arkansas and Mississippi doing some basmatis, but we're still seeing these Asian imports come in on that. Total domestic and residual use is projected higher at a record 162 million hundredweight with greater supplies. Total exports are also projected higher at 85 million hundredweight on larger supplies and more competitive U.S. prices. Now, this also goes back to something that we've been talking to for the last couple of years, talking about the I&I, the inflation and interest. And although inflation is slowing, we've certainly seen no deflation. And so with food prices, depending on the particular commodity being anywhere from 12 to 25% higher than they were 2 years ago, people are looking for cheaper sources of calories, cheaper sources of protein, cheaper sources of carbohydrates, and rice is a big one there. So I think that would explain some of how how the just the overall consumption is going up. So even though we're increasing yield, consumption's going up, but we're seeing a lot more competition, proving that this is never as simple as a good situation or a bad situation for rice producers. The U.S. soybean supply and use changes for 2023 and 24 include lower beginning stocks, lower production, lower crush, lower exports, and lower ending stocks. Lower beginning stocks reflect an increase in exports for 22-23. Soybean production is projected at 4.1 billion bushels, down 59 million, with higher harvested area offset by lower yield. Not going to be a banner year for the soybean crop this year. The soybean yield of 50.1 bushels per acre is down roughly one bushel from last month. Ending stocks are projected at 220 million bushels, down 25 million from last month. Although, as we saw from the futures market today, they are not studying that number right now. So the U.S. season average soybean price is forecast at $12.90 a bushel, up 20 cents from last month. And let's see here. Now let's move to the crop that is nearest and dearest to my heart, and that is the cotton crop. And the 2023-24 cotton projections include higher beginning stocks, but lower production, exports, and ending stocks. The U.S. production forecast is nearly a million bales off this month from last month, down 860,000 bales, with the Southeast and the Southwest leading the decline. Projected consumption is unchanged from August. Apparently, we're all still going to wear just as many blue jeans and sleep on as many sheets. But exports are down 200,000 bales. There's several things to explain that. Again, one of the things we're seeing is the economic slowdown in China is slowing the demand of mills want cotton. They just don't have the cash right now to buy it. So exports are down 200,000 bales and ending stocks are 100,000 bales lower. And anytime we see ending stocks lower in cotton, that's good news for those of us who are producing it. The season average price for upland cotton projected for 23-24 is 80 cents per pound, up 1 cent from the previous month. The 23-24 world cotton projections include lower beginning stocks, production, consumption, trade, and ending stocks relative to last month. World production is projected 1.7 million bales lower as reductions from the United States, India, the African franc zone, Greece, and Mexico more than offset the increase in Brazilian cotton. Now, we probably shouldn't expect that to continue on in future years. We've talked about the increase in acres in Brazil, so that's, again, something that we'll be watching. World consumption is more than a million bales lower, with primary reductions in India, Bangladesh, Mexico, and Vietnam. Again, the aforementioned I&I with inflation and economic slowdown. Folks in a lot of the countries, and certainly anybody who's looking at a borderline income can wear those pants one more year before they need to replace them. World ending stocks are 1.6 million bales lower this month at 90 million bales, and that is a moderately bullish WASDE report for cotton, which would explain our moderate reaction today, which probably would have been higher. But yesterday, you may recall that we traded up nearly 200 points. So we're seeing a little bit less than the normal reaction to that. And I pulled up a few other commentaries, but I think I think we've got more interesting things to talk about. So the crux of it is the grain numbers came in largely baked into the market. It's a little bearish on the grains. Cotton numbers came in friendly, but that's a little bearish as well. And so so now I think you're probably tired of listening to me ramble on about numbers. I would like to welcome our guest, Ms. Rosalie Knipp, the new state entomologist there in the Department of Agriculture in Jefferson City. Rosalie, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And now, Rosalie, I know that there are people who weren't aware that we had a state entomologist. It's remarkable how few people in the world, you know that they need a state entomologist. But tell us a little bit about what it is that you do for the state.
Sure. So I manage our plant pest control program here at the department. We are part of the plant industries team. So I have 8 field inspectors that go out into, and they're located at different parts of the state, and they go to different nurseries, greenhouses, any of your box stores that bring in plants from other states. They'll inspect the plants, and they're really looking for any pests that could be detrimental to our ag commodities here in Missouri. The other thing we deal a lot with is exports. So a lot of our lumber, corn, soybean, cotton, all that stuff, we can help with getting certificates issued for that. We'll do the inspections and get that sent off to different countries as well.
So now how much of your time do you actually spend out in the field around the state, and or do you spend most of your time there in Jeff City coordinating reports from scouts and other information?
Most of the time I'm here in the office in Jeff City, but I do get out and walk the fields with our inspectors. Like a couple weeks ago, I went down and helped with the greenhouse inspection before those plants got into our big box stores. I recently helped one of our other inspectors in the Boot Hill area set out sweet potato weevil traps so we could send sweet potatoes out of the state. Every once in a while, I'll go on an export inspection. And otherwise, you're right, I do a lot of the paperwork in making sure getting the reports written up and making sure like exports are running smoothly.
Well, now the sweet potato weevil kind of intrigued me. I'm a cotton guy, so when I hear weevil, my ears perk up a little bit. And to be honest, I've never done any commercial sweet potato production. Tell me a little bit about the sweet potato weevil, how big an issue that is, and whether that is related to some of the other weevils that we see in our other crops.
Yeah, so the sweet potato weevil, we don't actually have in Missouri. For us to actually export the sweet potatoes, we are required to survey for it. So we use actually boll weevil traps. They're the exact same as boll weevil traps. We just use a different lure in the trap, and that's what we our inspector sets out, and then she'll go out and check the traps right before harvest to make sure we actually don't have the sweet potato weevil, which we've never found it, but it allows us to, you know, do exports of our sweet potatoes.
Now I'm curious, do you or does someone in the department, is the question that I was asked recently, do you inspect agricultural equipment going from state to state, particularly going from zones where something like, say, the sweet potato weevil or the boll weevil might be active? If someone buys a module maker or a cotton picker down in Texas and wants to bring it up here, is there someone from the department who inspects that to actually confirm that they're not bringing weevils in from other areas?
Yeah, so usually what happens is if tractor equipment is being from Missouri, we will inspect it, and a lot of times we're sending it to California, and so we're making sure there's no dirt, all the pests are off of it and stuff like that, and we can issue a certificate stating we've looked at it and that they've cleaned it and that they've done all the sanitizing that they're supposed to do. For equipment coming into Missouri, a lot of times what happens, it's the state departments, my counterparts in those other states, are the ones checking the equipment, signing off on it before they bring it into Missouri. Of course, if anyone has any issues, they can always contact us, and we'd be happy to come out and take a look if they're finding insect specimens that they're a little worried about that, you know, could be like boll weevil or something. They're like, I just want to make sure my equipment doesn't have that on there.
Well, now you know, you just recently sent me a note. Some people may know I'm on the boll weevil eradication board because we really do not like boll weevils. We don't simply run them off. We eradicate them around here. And you mentioned to me about the cottonseed bug from California. Tell me a little bit about that. I wasn't really familiar with that particular insect, or at least not by that name. Tell me a little bit about what you were seeing and whether that's something that we need to be watching out for here.
Yeah, so right now the cottonseed bug has only been found in California, and they haven't found it in any fields that are producing cotton. They've actually found it in other tree species. So anything in the Malvaceae family that's part of the cotton family, this bug will attack. So a lot of in California where they found it were just in like mallow trees or hibiscus trees in neighborhoods. And so they went in and removed all of those trees. But this cottonseed bug would attack cotton, like the seeds part is what it would cause the most problems. Of course, when you're running the cotton through the gin, it could cause staining and just making it a less desirable product. So they were worried in California about this pest. And so they've done a lot of surveying where they found it, and then and especially in the cotton growing areas of California. So far, like I said, they haven't found it in the cotton fields there, and they are trying to eradicate it. Back in like 2014, it was actually found in Florida as well, and they were able to eradicate it there. And so they do continuous trapping because this pest is actually native to Africa and has been found in Asia, Europe, and some of the Caribbean islands. And so especially Florida, since they're close to some of those Caribbean islands, are really on the lookout for this pest and trying to prevent it from coming into the U.S.
So are they thinking that it came in on plants or ag products, or simply hitched a ride on a boat somewhere? Or how do they think it came ashore?
They aren't 100% sure. With it being on ornamental trees, it's possible if those trees came from different areas, not knowing the origin of those trees, it could have been that. A lot of pests can hitchhike on different things. So yes, you're right. It could have just been picked up on the ship. Some insects, especially like these smaller ones, like the cottonseed bug, can be moved in by winds because they can get blown up like hurricane winds or something like that, and be brought into the U.S. as well. So it's also possible that there was just a giant windstorm that blew them in. And so no one really knew that they were here until people started complaining about their plants in California.
Well, you know, let's see, we've got just a few minutes left here, but you know, we have a regular feature here on the show. We don't do it every week, but we try to do it most weeks, that we identify the invasive species of the week. And and you know, in the past we've discussed very obvous ones like the boll weevil, and mm-hmm. and sometimes we've also discussed some invasive species that aren't here, like the hippo population in Colombia that Pablo Escobar let roam into the Colombian rivers. So there's now apparently a population of a couple of hundred feral hippos down in Colombia. But are there things that, in terms of just general consumers, you know, a lot of these, when I'm reading, it does talk about them coming in with ornamental plantings and ornamental trees. What can consumers do to reduce the traffic of invasive species and try to keep them controlled so that we just have our ordinary homegrown pest to deal with?
Yeah. So, you know, just being informed about different invasive species, you can go to our website. We have different invasive species that we're on the lookout for. And you know, ask consumers if they're going into areas where they know the invasive insects are, that they check, you know, like their car or their camper before coming back, so that way they don't bring these invasive insects back with them into Missouri. So one good example is like the spotted lanternfly. That one, it attacks grapes. So it's not like people are normally bringing in grapes, but they are, you know, camping out at the East Coast. So that one's a really bad nuisance pest out there. So they like to lay their egg masses on anything. So that could be from firewood, their camper, their car, basically anything that can sit outside, they could have an egg mass with it. So if they're, you know, traveling, just be aware that these insect pests can get on these materials. And just checking and being careful on that would be great help to us to keep those invasive pests out of Missouri.
Well, moving forward, just at the moment, so what are your biggest concerns as we go into harvest right now? Are there any particular either invasive species or just plain old homegrown species that you're seeing in any particularly worrying numbers?
Nothing in worrying numbers as of right now. We've we've wrapped up our survey season for the summer. We search for different invasive species, such as the spongy moth, which was formerly known as the gypsy moth, which attacks oak trees, the walnut twig beetle, which attacks walnut trees. And all of those we've found either very few numbers and they're not really of concern. And so we do these summer surveys because we're trying to catch any population early enough that we could do eradication.
All right. Well, it looks like we're about out of time. I sure appreciate you coming on. If people have a question, where can they find you on the web, or what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, if they have a question about insects or anything, we have our plant pest email. You can also search our department website, and that email will be on there. But it's just plantpest@MDA for Missouri Department of Ag.mo.gov.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you making the time for us. And I know that we'll have the opportunity to talk boll weevils this spring. So hopefully we can keep them at the border.
Yes, I hope so too.
All right. Wonderful stuff. Rosalie Knipp, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
And Barry Bean, as always, we appreciate you joining us and helping to bring all this great information about ag and ag business to our viewers.
It's always a pleasure, and I learn something every time we do this.
All right, yeah, absolutely. Audience, thank you all for tuning in. We're going to be back just around the corner. We're turning back over to Local News Live, but it 3 o'clock, it's Heartland Afternoon. Stick around. Our program's often running, and we want you to be a part of that. We'll be